Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Asma Khalid. Today, Congressman Seth Moulton is in Ipswich to introduce the Chance in Tech Act. It's also known in long form as the Championing Apprenticeships for New Careers and Employees in Technology. It's a bill aimed at addressing a huge problem in the tech sector, the growing skills gap. Moulton wants to bring more people into the tech pipeline by expanding and investing in technology apprenticeship programs. We caught up with Congressman Moulton earlier today. He was on a cell phone in his car, so you might hear some background noise. I started by asking him what exactly the Chance in Tech Act would do.
Well, the Chance in Tech Act basically sets up this public-private entity to serve as a vehicle to get more apprenticeships in tech. This is something that we've seen across the world as a valuable way to train people for the IT jobs of the future, but we don't have good opportunities for apprenticeships here in America.
So, Congressman, is it going to be something that addresses, you know, high school grads or community college grads who are sort of eligible for these apprenticeships?
Well, it could be both. People who have gotten to had some community college or people who were straight out of high school. Of course, it depends on the qualifications necessary for the certain job or apprenticeship. But the point is that apprenticeships are a really great way to train workers for the new economy. And we don't have those opportunities, or at least we don't have enough of them in America today.
And you're talking about this as a public-private partnership. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean that we've seen a financial commitment from companies, or do you have a sort of a commitment that they will hire X number of apprenticeships or apprentices, sorry?
That's exactly what we're trying to get, because there just isn't as much job training going on in corporate America as there once was. Big corporations, local companies used to take folks off the street, including many immigrants, for example, and teach them how to do the jobs in their factories. That's not happening enough in America today, and we want to jumpstart that because there are an awful lot of jobs that are unfilled.
Mm-hmm. And so at this point, is it going to be financial commitment and or a commitment to hire a certain number of apprentices?
Well, the specific policies will have to be developed. That's something that will take time. And we want the public sector and the private sector to work together to do that. Because ultimately, this should be something that not only benefits American workers, but benefits American companies, especially the startups, the new companies that are leading the way in technology. We want them to be leading the way in the global economy, and we want them to do it with American workers.
And do you already have any commitments or partnerships with companies in the Boston area?
We don't yet, but there are an awful lot of companies in the Boston area that are prime for this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm going to EBSCO up in Ipswich, one of the biggest employers in my district, today for the press conference. They're enthusiastic about this. They see the value of it. And we're bringing in a lot of companies to learn more about it. We're just getting this effort started. This is a new thing. This is a new innovation. So it'll take a little bit of time to get it. But this is the kind of leadership we need to embrace the economy of the future.
So, you know, one of the things that interested me about this bill is that it had such a wide, it seems like, bipartisan level of support at this early stage. And that's something you don't often see in politics. So I was impressed to see that. But then on the flip side, I will say in covering tech, one of the things I've noticed is that there is this sort of bias towards people with a college degree. And I've talked to, you know, folks who hire at tech companies, and whether or not a college degree is always needed, there just seems to be this preference for it. So I'm curious if that's something that you've already sort of heard or discussed in any of the conversations you've been having.
Look, I've seen that a lot. I see that preference. And look, I'm a big supporter of everybody in America having the opportunity to go to college, but that doesn't mean that everybody wants to go to college or that's the best thing for everybody. Sometimes when we need IT help around the office, you know, people say, well, I've got a high school kid who knows this better than anyone. So we've got to be open to those opportunities and recognize that there are many different ways that Americans can contribute to the new economy, and it
they don't all require a college degree. Mm-hmm.
So since I have you on the line, can I pivot just for a minute and talk to you a little bit about a few other political stories that have been bubbling this week?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So President Trump tweeted this morning that he cannot imagine that Congress would dare to leave Washington without a beautiful new health care bill, fully approved and ready to go. Are you expecting that to happen?
Well, I certainly hope that we leave Washington without stripping health care away from millions of Americans, because that's what the Republicans are trying to do.
Uh-huh. And you've come out strongly against the GOP health care plans. But I'm curious what you think Democrats need to do to make their opposition sort of, as effective as possible to this, particularly the Senate bill.
Well, look, we've got to just explain this to the American people. We just got to explain what this GOP health care bill will do. It's really not even a health care bill. How do you call a bill that takes health care away from millions of hardworking Americans a health care bill? It's really just a tax cut bill for the ultra rich. And mm-hmm. The facts speak for themselves, but we've got to tell that story. We've got to explain to people what's at stake here. We've got to explain to what it means to their families if the Republicans succeed in passing this horrible, horrible bill.
And Congressman, you did multiple tours in Iraq, so I just want to ask you briefly about the latest news out of Mosul. This weekend, Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi went to Mosul to congratulate the Iraqi army for winning the city back from ISIS. What is your reaction to the idea that the Iraqi forces have reclaimed this city?
Well, first of all, it's congratulations. This is a great achievement, and it's something that the Iraqis did with our support, but leading the effort on their own. But my question is the same question I always ask, which is, what comes next? Frankly, it doesn't surprise me that they were able to defeat ISIS in Mosul. It was only a matter of time. But we've defeated terrorist organizations like this in the past, and yet they keep coming back because we don't put the proper governance and diplomatic efforts into ensuring the peace. So what comes the day after Mosul falls still remains the key question, and I have yet to hear a good answer.
I know that you were quite critical of the Obama administration's Iraq policy, or lack of an Iraq policy. Do you feel that you've gotten any greater clarity from the Trump administration about what's next?
Absolutely none. And to be clear, my view on the Obama administration policy is that they were actually quite effective at defeating ISIS. The Obama administration killed a lot more ISIS fighters than the Trump administration has to date. But the question I asked again was, what mm-hmm. comes after we defeat ISIS on the battlefield? And the Trump administration has yet to even address that question, let alone provide a good answer.
So, Congressman, one sort of final parting question, and that is that, you know, I was a political reporter in a former life when we first
yes,
met, when I actually covered your run the first time for Congress. And I'm curious because I know that you've been very vocal about House Democratic leadership, specifically Nancy Pelosi. But there are reports that early on she helped you and that you wrote a letter thanking her for that help. And I'm curious to hear from you what has changed, if anything.
Well, first of all, there's nothing changed in the sense that I'm happy to write thank you notes for people who do good things. I mean, I wrote a thank you note to Paul Ryan last week. That doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with him. But the reality is that we need new leadership in the party. We can't keep losing election after election. And our party leaders have to be accountable for that. So I have great respect for Nancy Pelosi and all the things that she has done. She's the first woman to become Speaker of the House. But I think we all know that it's time for new leadership today, that we've got to have a plan that's forward-thinking, that brings all Americans into the new economy, that says that we're not just going to oppose Trump, we're going to provide some real alternatives. We're going to provide a new vision for the country. That's what Democrats need today. We've got to start winning again because so much is at stake. And this GOP healthcare bill is the latest example of what happens when Democrats aren't winning elections and don't have the reins of power in Washington.
Do you have an idea of how to do that, how to start winning again?
Well, I think part of that equation has to be new leadership. I think part of that equation has to be coming to terms, looking ourselves in the mirror, and recognizing where we've failed in the past and what we need to change to start winning in the future.
That was Congressman Seth Moulton. He represents the Massachusetts 6th Congressional District. I spoke to him earlier today from the North Shore.